You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Thanks for choosing this free Anfield Index podcast. If you'd prefer to listen to this or any of our other shows without adverts, then now's the time to check out Anfield Index Pro. With AI Pro, you can supercharge your entire listening experience. You'll not only get all of our podcasts without the ads, but you'll have them far faster with our quick publish feature available exclusively for subscribers. AI Pro also puts you in the heart of our sound studio, with an option to listen to many of our shows live and interact with the podcasters in real time as the shows are recording. Upgrading couldn't be easier. AI Pro is available on all popular podcast platforms, and we have our own apps for Apple and Android. Just head on over to AnfieldIndexPro.com and get started today.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the latest Anfield Index Under Pressure podcast. My name's Dan Kennett, and we don't have Si this week. He's over in the US watching his beloved Yankees. I think he saw a win. And he's also popped into the Liverpool, New York official supporters branch to watch the Man United game. We were trying to get a live satellite link up for the pod. Didn't quite turn out that way. But I do have Dr. Bartz. Evening, Bartz.
How we doing, boys?
Could have been better. It was half... half an elite performance.
This is true.
You missed a couple recently, so good to have you back on, mate.
Yeah, I've missed it. Working, personal, been got in the way as usual, but nice. But I've missed podding, so it's been good to be back. Good to be back.
And he's a Virgil van Dijk. He's the ever-present. It's Hamza Khalid-Lunat, that sports writer at the Times. Evening, Hamza.
Evening, everyone. Not so jovial today because we are joint second. Well, joint first, but in second. But yeah. And bring some sort of rationality to two quite bizarre matches.
Yes, very. In fact, two matches which are kind of the kind of ones you want. Lots of lots of talking points in both. That's exactly what you want for a podcast. let's start by looking at the lineups for that Sheffield United game. We're not going to spend too long on Sheffield United, but we always say this, and then we spend like an hour talking about the first game. We're not going to spend too long talking about Sheffield United, so let's see how we get on. But Hamza, how did we set up for this one?
Endo had a knock, which meant McAllister plays the deepest player. So it was a 4-3-3, Bradley, Konate, Van Dijk, Gomez, right to left. So Gomez playing at left back. Grab McAllister, Szoboszlai midfield three, and then Diaz, Nunez, Salah front three. Pretty much as you expect up top. Good to see Gravenberg back. Curtis was on the bench, as was Robertson as well. Otherwise, with the players available, the only other people that may have been in consideration would maybe Tsimikas or Kwanzaa, I guess. Mm-hmm. One place to get into, I guess, is Konate. But yeah.
If Si had been here, I would have asked him, because he's the one with the most dressing room experience, Hamza. So if you're Harvey Elliott and you see Ryan Gravenberch come, you've been propping up the team for a trip from January to March, playing nearly every game, and then Ryan Gravenberch comes straight back in over the top of you. What are you thinking if you're Harvey Elliott?
Well, you'd be a bit upset, but it's nothing new, I guess. I mean, you'd feel the same about England as well. He's playing quite well for the 21s. So he hasn't got the call up there. It's something that he just accepts. I guess it's harder to take when you're a young player who for a while has been talked up as a very, very good young player. So when you're...
I'd say it's the best form of his Liverpool career.
Mm.
Easily.
I'd agree, yeah. So, yeah, it can be hard. But I don't really think that there's... Yeah, the reality of this match in particular is as well, it's that Sheffield United are quite big. And you ideally don't want a midfield composition of of McAllister and Elliott, because you've not got much height there. And when it comes to set pieces, then you're going to think, maybe a bit short, quite literally just on attacking and defensive set pieces.
Well, that's a very sensible suggestion, because we have got to the stage where he never plays against Brentford, for instance. He always, because of the set piece dominance there. So, yeah, that's a good a suggestion as any, I think, Hamza. So, Bart, before we get into the game itself, do you want to give us that match summary? You don't have to give us the full one. Just give us the key points, because obviously the main talking point stats wise after the game was the Opta's record possession, 83% possession.
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy to do that. I haven't got it as high as that, I have to say, but that's fair enough. I've got 74, which is interesting. I've got us Phil Till 85.7 to their 14.
Yeah,
I'll just do total shots. Won't break it down any more than that. But 29 to their 5. We had 2 big chances to their 1. Their goal was an OG, so it doesn't register on my stats. Just the way it is. XG 1.67 to their 0.6, both non-penalty on target XG, so 1.13 for us and 1.02 for them, so quite close. EPV completely dominant from us, 1.44 to their 0.3, but that means they converted theirs at 200%, we only converted at 116%, so I think that's actually a third game in a row we didn't convert at the same rate as the opposition, which is, I said, was a worrying trend before. I know I've been out for a while, but I posted in our chat that was a bit disturbing. Our pass completion up at 90% though is obviously one of our elite levels. Normally it's around sort of 80s. So on the stats side of it, a fairly dominant display. But as we will go into, maybe it isn't.
I noticed in your stats pack that the most likely single scoreline was 1-1 in this match.
Yes, should have mentioned that. Apologies, staff. Thanks for picking it up on me.
I always spend a good time looking through, which tells you something about the statistical numbers in this match. It wasn't that heavily weighted for us.
And it's the thousand teams, and we've had this debate recently with the United game as well. It's a fairly, you can put that at 10,000 if you wanted to, but it's just based on purely a sample size for the XG for that game. But I think because they had that chance in the first couple of minutes, wasn't it, from the throw-in, that's quite a high level of XG where he puts it just past the post in that 6-yard box. I think that some of those might have come into it. But no, for sure. 1-0. The next two high scores were 1-0 and 2-0. So that's only by 1%. We were 64% probability win the game.
Yeah,
which probably feels about right for me. I don't know, on the balance of things, but yeah, yeah.
And you had a slight issue with the starting selection, Barts, in terms of what he did in this match and how it impacted the next match. We're going to talk about Man United.
Yeah, for me, we've discussed this before. This isn't an old thing. We have said this before about how he brings Konate back into it. I think Si even said that the last pod I was on about coming back from internationals, how he integrates Konate will be key. So by not playing him at the weekend, okay, fine. You're not happy with Konate coming back. It's in the previous game, the Brighton game, right? Fine. But United, for me, had to be the focus. So what lineup did you want for United? Now, to me, I don't think there's any way in the world he's gone, yeah, I want to play Kwanzaa against United. I just don't believe that's what he thought. If he did, then okay, fair enough. He knows football better than I do anyway. But I would have thought you plan to have your starting four as best you can against United in the freshest possible condition, and midfield and the front three. He seemingly did that with the other two units. Yeah, Endo took a knock, so he was rested. Wasn't even wrist. Probably could have played, but he took a knockout. So they managed that. Whether you think Gravenberg over Harvey, yeah, I get the higher thing, but equally, for me, he carried an empty shirt for 45 minutes. The back line, though, for me, I think there was tactically it affected us, because if you look at the pass match, we basically didn't utilise our left side when we had two fit left backs. Sheffield United, Costas is more than capable of playing against Sheffield United. There's just no way. I don't think you can argue. So that's a left back should have played, which meant Joe could have played right back, which meant Bradley could have got a whole game against United. Or Joe plays the whole game against United and Bradley plays the whole game at Sheffield United. You don't, for me, that mixture there wasn't right. And equally, Konate, if you wanted to bring him in, just play him 45. We've done it in the Europa League. Just play him 45, bring Kondo in for 45 or vice versa. Job done. We've seen that rotation happen in a midweek game. Then for the weekend, you could have gone in with fresh fullbacks, because both fullbacks wouldn't have played at the week at midweek. The first choice centre-half partnership. And I just think in those big, big moments, the errors, unfortunately, in some of our recent games have come down the same side. Bradley and Kwanzaa are kids. They've done amazing, but they're kids. And there comes a time when if they make an error in a top-level game, you don't get away with it.
Yeah.
We didn't get away with it at the weekend.
No, not having Konate against Man United, again, does seem... I can't figure that out
because I'm not saying Kwanzaa isn't a good player. Please, I'm not knocking that. He's been brilliant. But Konate is not...
He's not first choice, is he?
He's not first choice. Konate is not as good on the ball, I would say. But in that, it means that the choices Konate makes are sometimes better in that situation. So the situation we'll come on to, I think Konate just knocks that forward.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's my issue with that. I didn't get the planning, considering it was a block of two games.
Yeah, I think it's a fair comment, to be honest, mate, overall, especially the Konate one. And just before we come on to the Gomez or Tsimikas or even Robertson one, both matches here, we used to talk about Bantavis a lot in terms of the way that some days of visualization can just lend themselves to banterous comments, right? And this game and the race chart for the XG features a quite unique thing where basically Sheffield United stay at 0.7 for the whole match.
Yep.
Because they have it looks like a second horizontal axis. They have all their chances in the first minute of the game and then stay there.
And then stay there because obviously the OG doesn't register as XG for them, right? So it's crazy. The other really, like the pass maps, there's some crazy ones going around.
Is it true that Sheffield United did not generate a passing network?
Yeah, there's one line. Between
is it the goalkeeper to the centre forward?
No, it's the centre half to the left back. That's it.
That's it.
And if you go to the, you know, I do passing connections, so how many times a player's passed to each other? Sheffield United don't have any listed. Because no one's over five.
Oh, my word. That's just nonsensical, isn't it? See, anybody in the team.
No one in the team made a connection with somebody else. Successful connection of over five.
Yeah.
What?
So,
Hamza, it looks like a level game.
let's talk about that nervy start. And it was, I think it was about 45 seconds, wasn't it? Something.
It was very, very quick into the match. In fact, I'll tell you when it is. I think that's about right. Yeah.
One minute.
It was a header from the left side into Ahmedhodžić.
We're going to get Bart to pronounce him later.
Sorry. He was positioned between Szoboszlai and Nunez around, I think, 4 yards, maybe 5 yards in from the penalty spot towards the thrower on the left side. Nunez, I think, sort of jumped a bit early or got pushed very slightly, which allowed him to make the first contact. And at the back post, you've got Gomez and Diaz against the shot taker, who is, sorry, I don't know much of the United players too well, McAtee and Berrison Diaz. And usually with these sort of things, you see with set pieces like this, with the front first contact, you often see something like this playing out. So you'll have players at the back post, and initially on the first contact, it looks all right. But as you see the first contact play out, or as you see the ball go in just before the first contact is made, the players that are defending the back post zone often see that area and go, oh, the ball is short. Let me move closer. Let me move a bit closer to and follow the ball in. And that's what Gomez does here. He sees the ball dropping short of him. He takes a step towards it. And then it makes contact off Ahmedhodžić's head. And at that point, he's Gomez, that is static. Him and Diaz are static. And the ball goes over the back of their heads, over the top of their heads, sorry, to McAtee, who's free at the back post. This is a massive, massive, massive chance. And it's a really good save or a bad finish or a bit of both. Let's say by Kelleher, sorry. But yeah, this is a huge chance. And Liverpool really should be a goal down here. It's pretty bad. And they have another shot, I think, a minute later from the subsequent.
Well, from the corner, I mean, I think it goes right across the face of goal. It's almost a week ago now, so I'm stretching my memory here.
Yeah, that's right. So the shot is registered as Trusty's shot, but personally, I'm not sure if it is a shot. Well, I mean, ideally, with that delivery, you want the first contact to be as it is, so someone at the back post follows in. And so while they get 0.04 XG for this, I mean...
Oh, it was much bigger than that.
Ideally, I think what this should actually go down is, well, if you're planning this, it should be a pass that is, and then there should be a shot at the end of it at the back post, which should be really, really big because it's right across the face of the goal and it's only a couple of yards out. And I think Berrettin Diaz also follows and he just misses it. So they actually should have had another shot there, but it just didn't get turned into one because no one reached it. But yeah, two massive chances there to start the match off.
I don't need a VPN. I've got nothing to hide. This is what I used to tell myself before I hooked up with LibertyShield.com. Not only is my home internet now fully encrypted, but I can now access all the websites I want, whenever I want, and do so from absolutely anywhere. As a Liverpool fan, I love to know I can now watch every match, regardless of whether it's on UK TV or not. My Liberty Shield VPN makes sure nothing is blocked and guarantees me super fast streaming speed throughout that match. You can get connected right now with their software package, which includes a 48-hour no-obligation free trial and instant access to their apps for Apple, Android, Fire TV, PC, Mac, and Android TV. Or go a step further like I have and get one of their pre-configured VPN routers. These small but powerful devices allow you to easily connect every device in your home to VPN, making it the perfect solution for smart TVs, Mac boxes, and games consoles. Visit LibertyShield.com today and use coupon code AIVPN25 to get 25% off at checkout.
Yeah. Yeah, unfortunately so. And Bart, how did we respond to that? What was our pattern of play to try and get a foothold back into this game after, you know, such a shaky start?
I think we settled ourselves a little bit after that shaky start, because bearing in mind they didn't do anything past that point.
No.
Right? They went, right, we've had a chance, we've not scored. We went up the other end. I think Mo had a volley just over the barge not long after that. And we had some good patterns of play. Did I start doing the zone 14 stuff for this game, or did I not put it in? No, I didn't.
I think you did, actually.
Yeah, I did, yeah. So even in the first 15 minutes, we're happily getting in the left half, the half space. We've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 6 progressive passes in and out of zone 14 in that first 15-minute period. So, you know, it's not like we weren't in that sort of groove of getting the ball in the right areas. Both half spaces, we've got passes going in and out of and forward. So it wasn't like they were preventing us from doing anything. It's just, if you look at the shot pattern as well, we are taking the shots, particularly in that first sort of period. We've had 5 shots in that first period, 4 shots in the first period. So we're getting them on target, but it's a problem we've said for a while though. And Darf, you've been one to highlight this quite well, is our shot quality, you know, 0.06 for the first 15-minute
well,
period. That's not great. Yeah,
we had, up until the point we took the lead, we had 20 shots for 1 XG.
Yeah.
Which is 4.7, which is woeful. A 5% chance is basically just outside the D. Yeah?
Yeah.
It's about a 5% range.
Or an angle.
Or an angle,
yeah. Yeah.
And so I guess the thing is that, Kamsa, right? There's a lot. We've watched Liverpool for years having to play at home against a team who parks the bus, right? And we've watched some Liverpool teams fail miserably time and again to break down park buses. Over the years, under Klopp, we've become reasonably effective, especially, you know, at home. But what did you think about our approach in this match, in the tactics we went about? Because they basically played a back five, four men in front of that, if you're lucky, and then one notional forward, pretty much.
Yeah, it was a real struggle. I mean, for the volume of passes that Liverpool had, an awful lot weren't doing that much. Ideally, you want to be moving the team side to side quickly. You want to be opening up sort of switch passes. You want to overload one side so the opposite side is underloaded. Mm-hmm. So like, let's say you bring five players or six players over to the right side and then quickly hit it back across, either to Virgil or use one of the players there to switch it on the left side and attack from that. Yeah, those are the sort of things that you want to be doing. And I think the play was too stymied and slow across the back, which was a bit of a problem.
Well, all those things you pretty much listed, apart from one, none of those were possible because we just did not have any width at all on the left-hand side, did we?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Diaz was trying to, I guess, at times, over the touchline. Gomez was continually coming inside, and Szoboszlai was narrow as well, wasn't he, as the left eight, more central than anything. So, you know, you're trying to... Anfield's a narrow pitch, and you're trying to beat them, part boss, by kind of just hammering down the centre almost, right? And a bit of Conor Bradley on the right with Mo Salah.
I'd agree with that assessment. I think that was fundamentally the problem. And where you may sort of have a bit of joy with that is if you've got someone like McAllister playing further up. If he's playing as the 10, and if you are playing through the middle, then ideally having someone who can receive in tight spaces and release very quickly, very smartly into space and punch lines and get into the box, that could work. But because McAllister was deep, we didn't have that. So it didn't work as well. And
the other thing you can do as well is if your fullback and defender do come in the midfielder do come in field, and it's suddenly your wide forward is out there, he can be isolated potentially 1v1 against the player. But Diaz never really attempted to go 1v1 and get around the back. And then he was continually cutting inside as well. And he was coming back inside into an impossibly crowded central area. So we kind of got between two stools, maybe three stools.
Yeah, and I guess one of the things as well is maybe in years gone by, so it sort of depends. Sometimes depends on where your wingers are positioned. Ideally, sometimes you may want a fixed nine to pin one of the opposition centre-backs or two of their centre-backs.
Or both, yeah.
If they've got a back three, that becomes a bit more difficult. Then maybe you actually want to play with a front two to pin four players back by standing between centre-back, and centre-back or full-back, whichever way their system is shaped. Other times, though, what you want is the wingers to come in and stay and have their positioning between the fullbacks and centre-backs or whatever. Your fullbacks overlapping and giving width, and then a false nine that's dropping in to link the midfield to the front two, essentially. But because we don't have Firmino anymore, that dynamic's a bit different. Yeah. And the only player that could really do that, I guess, is Jota of the forwards, because Nunez, his hold-up play has improved and his link-up play has too, but that's never been his game, and I don't think it ever will be, coming into the false nine pocket and sort of adopting play like that as a forward.
I don't even think Jota's dog that could have dropped in. I think the one who would probably do it best of all that would be Cody, and then he's more, you know, he's no Bobby, that's for sure. Yeah.
Also,
Bart, so you've been shaking your head while Hans was speaking.
Yeah, no.
You're probably having flashbacks, I think.
I was having flashbacks. The other problem we had, this was about Palace away. You had Gravenberg. You know, we talk about midfield roles.
Yeah.
So we went out with two carriers.
Yes.
And a deep line playmaker, which, as Hans has quite rightly said, there's the issues with we don't have a deep line playmaker higher up the pitch. He's been in superb form. But equally, you've got two, you both eights trying to do the same thing.
Yeah.
And equally, because Gravenberg plays the left eight entirely differently to what he's not in sync yet, right? It's not his fault. He's what yada yada yada. But he ended up in a lot of the space with Diaz or trying to overlap Diaz. And he just simply hasn't got that pace to do that. And then Diaz is coming inside into areas which he's not effective at. So you end up with three or four players in areas that are just not effective at being involved in. And I just think it's a bit harsh for me to call him an empty shirt first half, but I do think we played very much with one hand behind our back for the first 45. We didn't use the left-hand side of the pitch, as we said, and we had players, we had, as you, your famous phrase, Darth, as many others, is square pegs in round holes. And yes. Simply, if you're going for a title, you can't do that. You just can't do that.
No. Can you, the inversion, the fullbacks has worked very well for us in many matches this season, right? Can you figure out what the game plan was? Why invert in this game?
No, I that's a real, sorry, that's a real simplistic answer, but I just think inverting the fullback allows you to have a double pivot and a sort of box defense basically, and allows you to still have five in the front and two tens or something.
And
like
it's an extra man in terms of build up options, in terms of passing angles. But the other thing is, it's primarily against the opposition countering you, and he's in a better position, which is a non-factor in this match, right?
Yeah, they're not going to counter on us, so you're better off doing the high and wide traditional fullback cop play. That's, in my opinion, it would have been better to have Costas down one side, Bradley down the other. If you're really Chris Wilder, stretch him,
and if you're Chris Wilder, right, and you're seeing Joe Gomez continually in the centre of your half on the ball. Yeah. You should be thinking happy days, right?
Oh, 100%, because he knows his team have only got to defend two-thirds of the pitch in terms of width. And we've already condensed it, so it's one half, so he's got...
Yeah.
I've got to disagree slightly, because if McAllister
is good, healthy
as the number six, and you've got a bunch of tall, strong guys that are quite physical and can break...
So, a minder.
I think you do need someone like Gomez... a profile like that to sit alongside him. If you look how porous Liverpool were last season with Fabinho, who's a lot better at defensive than McAllister is, and you see how open Liverpool were and how much trouble he had in defending that space, even against lesser teams, I think it makes sense to have a player, like you said, minding him. If they're quick and they're strong and they're good in the air, I think that makes sense. Whether that should have been Gomez inverted from left back that just means that you probably should.
What about Gomez in centre mid and then Tsimikas at left back?
I was going to say, what about Gomez just playing six?
Well, that could have been an option, I guess,
Because he did that. He's done that for two games now and done all right.
I don't think anyone's going to disagree with the Tsimikas playing left back. Yeah, I think that would have worked.
It's just for the natural width and do all those things that you said, stretch the play, allow, enable the switch, you know, allow overloads on both sides and...
But at the same time, I don't think anyone here is also a fan of Gomez as a six.
No one is, right? But for the fact we've only got one basic six in the squad, right? Yeah. And in this game, I genuinely think Joe's skill set would have done all right in that. Where was the game? Was it Forest? He went away. Where was he? He's played a cup game as a six, and he's played another league.
You can almost like him play him in the back four, and then basically just step into midfield constantly and play as a six.
Yeah, but I think the benefits outweigh the limitations by having Max in a Mac higher up, Costas playing left back, and the risk of Gomez being counted on as a six. I think would have outweighed what we've ended up having, which is Grav not quite used to the position. Mac in the six means he's down limited and no left side. It's always a cost benefit analysis.
Let's imagine, for example, Curtis plays instead of Grav.
I was going to ask you about the two roles. The roles of not being complementary in that midfield. Do you agree with that point from Bartz?
I think that's fair. And the reason I mentioned, I think Curtis would have been a better fit. Of course, he's not fully fit yet because he's just
Curtis and Grav, or Curtis and Dom. But either of those things would have been better probably than Dom and Grav.
For example, if you had Grav on the left side, and then if you just forced Diaz to hold width, then I don't think that left side is as much of a problem, because if you have someone that holds width, you're ideally stretching just by standing wide. You're going to pull the opposition wing back over to you a bit. Curtis, I know he's reined in his attacking instincts over the past year or so, but he still is a very good attacking midfielder, and he does break into the box.
He's
very sharp on the turn. I mean, if he was in the left half space attacking down that channel, then I don't think Gomez playing at left back and inverting is a problem. But it's about balancing that left side as a whole And having the right, like you said, the right profiles, because Diaz comes in a lot, that makes it a bit.
Yeah, Diaz cuts in. Zabaleta doesn't really want to go out there, and then and Gomez. So you, I looked on your pass map, pass networks, Bart. There's not one point until we make the subs where we've got somebody outside the width of the penalty area on the left hand side.
I know. It's. I think actually what we're all saying is we got the combination wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
We can all agree on what which one. He's the wrong piece, but fundamentally, he got the left side wrong.
And the roles, yeah, okay.
But is it possible to get the left side right if you don't have a left winger that holds width?
Yeah, you play a left back.
Yeah, play an overlapping left back, like and just say, just like Andy Robbo against Man United. It's not like we had to worry about doing much defending, is it, Hamza, in this game? You know, okay. So
we get to the goals.
Yeah,
get to our goals.
Bart, so you talk about some of my expressions I use. I always get pulled up on my various expression days on this part. We actually had the archetypal goal off somebody's backside in this match. How amazing was that? We always talk about when you're going through a bad run as a player, you just need one to go in off your backside. And it happened.
And it happened.
Fucking happened.
from a press as well. Solo press, though, but it was definitely a press and off his backside and in the net. But
I guess the important thing to note about this is that he'd done the exact same thing about a minute, 30 seconds before. He literally only just made his way back up to the centre circle and then he charged down the keeper again.
Yeah.
So, to be fair, that was you know, fair fucks to Darwin for that. I mean,
it's 9 times out of 10 it doesn't happen. Actually, less than 9 times out of 10 happens. And he just kept doing it. And he got his reward, right? And he just got to go, do you know what? Fair play. He got a goal. And it mattered. It mattered. It was the go-ahead goal.
Absolutely. Yeah. Right, yeah. So anything you want to add to that? That moment of pure gold, pure comedy, Hamza?
I think that the strangely weird and funny thing about it is he doesn't actually, like, charge the keeper down. He sort of ambles and then accelerates a bit. As in... he's jogging towards him. It's a freak. It's lucky. In a game like this, you take it. But as in, the process in this game is very bad. And I think that should be the main takeaway that people have from this. Sometimes you get away with it. But there is a lesson to be learned from this. And
this was more like a rugby incident, wasn't it? Where the fly half takes, or the fullback takes way too long to get his kick away and he just gets charged down. But
Yeah.
The equaliser, Hamza, talk to us about that. I mean, it was, they got the overload, but ultimately I don't think it goes in without the deflection off Connor, does it?
No, I don't think so. Again, there's an element of really bad luck there in that it takes the deflection off Connor Bradley and then goes through Callum's legs. But to have a 2-on-1 at the back post is not ideal. I'm just running through the situation itself, but Gomez gets beaten on the left side, which allows the cross to come in, and that's the first big problem. I mean, you can tell as this situation is developing, as they move the ball down the right side, that they do have three players that are approaching the box, two of moving straight to the back post, and Van Dijk and Bradley are the only players in the box, and Kanate sort of near side. But yeah, at this point, when the ball's about to come in, Virgil should be checking his shoulder. And Bradley should be talking to him and Kelleher if he can, because he's got a full view of what's in front of him, should be telling Van Dijk and Bradley how to coordinate themselves and that they've got a 2-on-1 at the back post. Once the ball is in the air, there's really not much you can do as a right back. I mean, right backs weirdly always get slated for this. Trent used to have it a lot. A ball will get stood up to the back post and a big guy sort of beats him in the air to it. And you go, and the sort of very simple-minded pundit will go, that's bad defending. Once the ball is up in the air and you're static because you're in a position where you want to defend the ball, whereas someone is running in to attack the ball, you're in a really bad position. You're in a bad place. You've not positioned yourself badly, is what I mean. But as in, there is no sort of good outcome that's going to come from that, because it's just a hard position to defend in. As a little shove in the back, tiny one, but not foul, then the header comes in off him and he's not time to react. But yeah, that the specific deflection is unlucky. The play leading up to it is not unlucky. That's bad defending.
Yeah.
As I say, BVD plays him on side, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. Yeah. Yeah. And at that point, 57 minutes gone, it's 1-1, and the XG is for the match is pretty much level, 0.9 to 0.7. And this is when we respond by he makes two double subs, Bart. So talk us through these first ones. Hamza, you've got the detail up after you, Hamza.
I have, yes. So Robbo and Arvi come on for Grav and Salah. Yep. Salah was a bit of a surprise.
Wasn't it just? He needed, he won one, and he subs off Mo Salah with half an hour left. It's crazy, yeah, isn't it? Unprecedented, I would say.
But he came off very quickly. I think he realized that Manchester United is the next match, so he's got to be fit for that. And he had only just started his first match the previous match, right?
Yeah, he played 4-90 against United.
Yeah. You see it happen in live, you go, ooh, I'm not so sure, but it makes sense. And Elliot came on and he was a real sort of, well, first of all, Robertson coming on just gave a bit of width and ability to cross more in the box, a bit better, overlap, all that sort of stuff. And Elliot just has, as you mentioned earlier in the start of the pod, he's in a fine bit of form at the moment. He's got that drive about him. He's winning the ball back really well. So it made sense.
Hey guys, it's Eddie Gibbs from Anfield Index here. I hope you're enjoying this podcast, and I'm sorry to call time on the show before it ends. In the current climate, it's tougher than ever before to offer podcasts for free. At Anfield Index, we produce over 75 free shows every month, which I'm confident is unparalleled in the LFC sphere. Whilst we'd love to offer everything for free, the production costs now make this impossible. That said, we don't want to follow the model of other channels and lock all of our content behind a paywall. So what we've decided to do is to continue offering every show for free, but cut that offering to 30 minutes on our longer shows. So to get all of our shows in full and enjoy the best of everything we have to offer, we really hope you'll consider supporting the channel and signing up at AnfieldIndexPro.com. For about the price of one cup of coffee, you'll get every podcast in full with zero ads. You'll also get access to our LFC VIP community, where you can enjoy live podcasts, engage with our podcasters, and chat with other Reds in real time. So that website again, AnfieldIndexPro.com. Join today.
Sports Social Podcast Network.